City. God save the United States and His Honorable Court.
Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. First case for argument this morning is in the matter of United Airlines. Mr. Kaiserstein.
May it please the Court, Mark Kieselstein on behalf of United Airlines, Inc. Your Honor, this matter is on appeal from the District Court opinion affirming the Bankruptcy Court's grant of summary judgment in favor of appellees and holding that the special facilities and ground lease between United and the City of Denver is a true lease for purposes of Section 365 of the Bankruptcy Code. Your Honor, in its SFO opinion, this Court asked and emphatically answered the question,
What is the status of this dispute and the next under United's plan of reorganization?
Your Honor, under United's plan of reorganization, we have conditionally assumed these leases with the flexibility to have that conditional assumption, in essence, go away should these leases ultimately be determined to be financings, in which case they would simply be treated as pre-petition debt.
Mm-hmm. Okay, thank you.
Your Honor, the answer to the question of what is a lease in federal bankruptcy law that this Court gave in the SFO opinion mandates the same result in Denver. How is Denver like SFO? Let me count the ways. Like SFO, the facility's rent owing to the paying agent, HSBC, is nothing more than the cost of capital hired before the bankruptcy. Like SFO, the facility's rent bore no relationship to the actual market rental value of the to-be-constructed facilities. Rather, rent equal debt service plus principal.
Well, when you say the rent bears no relation, that depends on our willingness to sever one transaction into two, does it not?
Absolutely, Your Honor.
But that's everything in this case stands or falls on the severance argument. So instead of just saying, if we sever, then part of it is a financing arrangement, you will need to spend, I think, direct your attention to the question whether we should sever, and that seems to me a question of Colorado law.
And, Your Honor, I agree. And one thing I would point out before getting to Colorado law is in the SFO opinion, the Court posited the hypothetical of a 20-year aircraft lease that contained both financing and true lease aspects. And the Court noted the role of law, UCC specifically, to disentangle the credit and consumption components of a particular transaction. In terms of severability, the Colorado law, like the law of many other states, have phrases to test as whether the parties asserted to all the promises as a single whole, so that there would have been no bargain whatever if any promise had been struck out, from the Homier v. Pharisee truck case. Your Honor, looking at that question in this particular factual context, I think one has to start with Ordinance 626, which was enacted in 1984, was the original ordinance, if you will, that laid out the possibility of this sort of financing being done for the new airport that was under contemplation at Denver. That ordinance authorized the city to enter into one document, a net rent lease for special facilities, and another document, a net rent lease for the ground lease. Now, fast forward 8 years or so to Ordinance 712. Now, that ordinance did not mandate that these two documents be collapsed into one, although it certainly did not prohibit it. I would note that the recitals in 712 D and E refer to two separate net rental leases, one for ground and one for facility. Your Honor, the only evidence in the record as to why these two leases ended up in one was from a United attorney who had worked on the matter at the time, who said that these transactions were shuffled together like a deck of cards for administrative convenience. But whether it was for administrative convenience or was purposeful, the fact remains that it is simply one additional layer of pancake makeup, cosmetics, meant to disguise the fact that what we have here is a facilities lease that bears no resemblance, no more resemblance to a true lease than what we saw in SFO, and that the true lease, the ground lease, was simply something with which this was conjoined in unnatural fashion. Your Honor, the other factor...
So far you haven't discussed any Colorado law.
Well, Your Honor, the John versus United Advertising case talked about one of the major factors, which is whether there was allocable consideration between the separate promises that are contained in the one document. And here, Your Honor, the consideration is not only allocable, it's allocated. The ground rent is determined on square foot plus common area expenses on a monthly basis paid in advance. The facilities rent paid semi-annually in arrears in an amount equal to service the interest on the bonds. The ground rent is paid to the City of Denver. The facilities rent is paid to HSBC, the paying agent. The facilities rent commenced immediately when
All right. Look, I'm asking you to talk about Colorado law. You're just reciting the facts as you understand them. What Colorado case do you want us to look at for the proposition that allocable consideration requires the severance of one contract into two?
Again, the John versus United Advertising case cited in our papers, Your Honor, is a case that stands for that proposition. Its facts are not the same as these facts. These are unique facts, obviously, but that is a case that lays out that general proposition, which is what we are relying on in this case.
Who on the facilities rental and the ground rentals, where there's divided payment, who is the check drawn upon?
I'm sorry?
Who is the payor on those checks? Are they the same? Or
United writes both checks, okay. Your Honor. It writes the facilities check to HSBC for the benefit of the bondholders. It writes the ground lease check to the City of Denver, to enable the City of Denver to recover its costs related to that true lease portion.
So the city never gets that portion that doesn't go through somebody in the city who then pays it out. It goes directly to the bank.
The city is not even a conduit for the facilities rent. It's paid directly to the paying agent. I would also add that the paying agent is the party that has the right to accelerate the facilities rentals if they are not paid. That is not something that the City of Denver is required or even able to do. They can do it only upon instruction from the bondholders pursuant to 11.2 of the lease. And there's also a provision in the ordinance itself that gives the paying agent the ability to accelerate the facility's rentals. So even though they're not a party to the lease, they in essence get to pull that string and force an acceleration of the facility's rental. They have no rights whatsoever with respect to the ground rentals or the ground. In fact, they have no rights with respect to the facilities either. Unlike San Francisco, where there was at least an ability of the purported landlord in San Francisco to re-enter the property, occupy it, and re-let it in the event of a default, here there's no right to enter, no right to occupy, no right to re-let on the part of the paying agent HSBC. Your Honor, several other points that I think support a severability in this context. There was a separate demisal of the ground to United, separate and apart from the demisal of the facilities. That's section 3.1 and 3.2 of the lease. The ground lease portions of the lease govern United's rights and obligations with respect to use and occupancy of the property, while the financing portions focus solely on creating a financing structure. Again, compare 6.1 and 6.2 of the lease. Again, in the event of a default, the facilities rentals can be accelerated and become payable in full, but the ground rentals are not similarly accelerated. The City of Denver has the option not to accelerate, and if they do, it's not a full payment of the ground rentals into the future, but it's only the amount that those ground rentals actually exceed the rental value of the ground for the balance of the lease. Your Honor, one additional factor that I think suggests here that the rental value, if you will, under the financing portions of the rental lease bears no actual relationship to the market value is the extended lease term of the lease. That's section 6.2B of the facilities and ground lease. That provision provides for a 9-year extension of the lease from 2023 to 2032. During those 9 years, the extended term rentals are calculated to be equal to the fair market rentals for the facilities, as evidenced by an independent appraisal. So from 1992 until 2023, facilities rent, which appellees would have us believe is somehow indicative of market value, is based on the exact amount necessary to service the bonds, but from 2023 to 2032, that facility's rent continues to be paid as before, unless there's been a prepayment of the bonds, but there's also fair market value paid to the city of Denver for those exact same facilities and their continued use by United.
Well, in that case, the payment, that portion of the payment would go to the city?
Yes.
And only what is necessary to service the bonds would go to the trustee?
Correct. And it's clear under 6.2 that the bondholders would expressly not be entitled to a dime of those fair market rentals, which I think is very strong evidence that what they're being paid, again, is simply the cost of the credit, the input one time pre-petition, and not anything related to the actual use or consumption of the facilities or the property by United. So, Your Honor, all these striking parallels demonstrate that this court's SFO opinion casts a very long shadow. Now, appellees run long and hard to try and get out from under, but again, the only factors they rely on are the consolidation of the facilities portion and the ground portion into one document.
Let me come back. I've just reread John.
Yes.
The Supreme Court of Colorado says that when there is evidence of separate payments, that separate payments for separate objects under the contract, that severability is a question of fact, and the Supreme Court of Colorado accepts the decision of the trial court. Of course, the decision of the trial court here is adverse to your client. So why would the decision of the trial court be clearly erroneous under the approach of John?
Because the district court did not look at this question of separate streams of payment. This court, in essence, gave credence to the label that the parties gave to the transaction and the fact that it was conjoined within one transaction, almost as if it were in one transaction, it by definition could not be severed. I don't think there was a focus on the separate streams of payment, which I don't think are a matter of dispute. I think those facts are undisputed. Nor was there a focus on the fact that certain monies went to the city of Denver, others directly to the paying agent. Nor was there, I think, a focus on any of the particular factors that I've just gone through. So with respect to the district court, I just believe that that was an erroneous decision that was clearly erroneous because it simply did not focus on
the decision. I'm referring to is the decision of the trier of fact. It's the bankruptcy judge.
And Your Honor, I don't believe that Judge Weedoff actually dealt with the question of severability at any length.
Yes, he did. At any length. Look, there's no requirement that judges write long opinions. It's enough to write good ones.
All right, let me just turn to that section of Judge Weedoff's opinion. Your Honor, Judge Weedoff held that nothing in the Denver lease manifested intent to treat the lease as divisible. Now, Judge Weedoff noted that the payments to the city, to the paying agent, were on account of the city, and that's the words that are in the lease. But I'm not sure what on account of the city means when it is undisputed that the city of Denver had no responsibility for payment of these bonds, did not lend the money in the first place. They were completely non-recourse to the city. So on account of may have been language that was inserted there for a purpose, but it doesn't actually stand up to scrutiny. The fact that there were defaults that could be triggered by the non-payment of the facilities rent simply manifests another way of tying together transactions that should not be tied together. If these documents were separate and it said the city of Denver can declare a default if United fails to pay on its bonds pursuant to the separate document, we would be asserting that that was an unenforceable cross-default under Section 365. And, in fact, we're litigating that very issue before Judge Weedoff on the O'Hare bonds, where there were two separate documents and there was a tying provision. So with respect to both Judge Weedoff, the trier of fact, and the district court, it's our view that those findings of non-severability simply don't hold up to scrutiny under the facts. Your Honor, may I reserve the balance of my time?
Mm-hmm. Certainly, counsel.
Thank you.
Mr. Van Gallen.